With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from the Lighthouse Hockey Podcast Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me this evening via Zencaster is my friend Michael Eboff. And Mike, the Islanders split their little mini series with the Devils, and we saw some good stuff and some bad stuff, including a shutout by a guy whose name I can't remember, Scott Wedgwood. I almost said Kyle Wellwood, but he was not a goalie and he retired, I think, about 5 years ago. So,
Kyle Wellwood. Talk about an unremarkable player.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and Scott Wedgwood is a bit of an unremarkable goalie, but he managed to shut out the Islanders last night to tune a 2-0, which followed a 4-1 Islanders win that was pretty workmanlike, I would say. They did a lot of good things. The Devils had a bit of a push in the second period of that one, but it was pretty much all Islanders for the first and third. And in fact, the first period might have been one of their better ones of the season so far. But, you know, right now they're 3-2. It's very early. They've played, I think, probably the least amount of games of anybody in the conference so far, or the division, I should say. And I don't know. I mean, is it too early to worry about certain guys on the roster? I don't know. I don't even know anymore, because we're always kind of worried around here. But I'm sure somebody's rolling their eyes and like, nah, oh, come on, give me a break. But I don't know. Some guys, I don't know. I'm starting to get a little bit worried.
It's too early to worry about like the big picture, I guess. But yeah, like the little things. Because like there are some teams out there that have really struggled out the gates, and you're like, yeah, no, if I was a fan of them, like Vancouver, they've allowed 33 goals in like 6-7 games. Like if I was a Vancouver Canucks fan, I'd certainly be worried.
Yeah.
But like as a big picture wise, I'm not worried because this is kind of where I expected them to be. So like 3-1-1, 3-2, whatever, however, 2-2-2, however they were going to get here. But, there are some like little annoying things that, you know, everybody kind of has picked up on. The most annoying one is that if the Islanders score, they win. If they don't score, they lose.
It's pretty simple.
And like it's weird that you can kind of tell what kind of game it is right away. You know, like the game against the Rangers that they won, they came out and barnstormed them. And then the game against the win against the Devils, same thing. Whereas the loss against the Devils, like that, how many periods would have it taken for the Islanders to score in that game? Probably like 7 or 8. Like it was every scoring chance was a minor miracle.
I don't remember a game. I mean, the Islanders have been shut out a number of times, obviously in that Rangers game too. But like the thing about, so in his post game words after the last night's game, Barry Trotz, you know, brought up that Rangers game and he was like, that seemed just really kind of like an outlier. Like it was just nobody was on the right page. Everybody is, you know, just individual breakdowns all over the place. And it just was never going to happen. With last night, I thought that, you know, in a lot of ways, they didn't play all that poorly, but just none of their scoring chances were really threatening. Like they had tons of zone time, especially after the first period, but just none of them felt like they were ever going to go in, you know, like a lot of weak shots, the Devils had a lot of blocks and not like the kind of like really big demonstrative blocks where they're like down on one knee or come sliding across or something. Like just a puck. They would just turn their foot and the puck would just go off into the corner. And it just felt very, for lack of a better word, impotent, to be honest with you. It was just a very impotent feeling of just watching them play and being like, it's not going to happen. And then as, you know, it gets down to about 5 minutes and you're like, you know, could they score 2 goals in 5 minutes? Yeah, I guess, but it's definitely not going to happen. Just did not feel like it was ever going to happen.
Yeah, it's like that Bruins game. It was weird because it kind of felt like there was goals in that game, right? There were some chances. There was the Beauvillier breakaway. Like there were chances. And yeah, this one, it was just, yeah, it was, I mean, if the people love to call the Islanders boring, like that was a boring game. Like we like to kind of push back on that, but that certainly was a Sunday night of a game you can get. It like felt like you had to do homework for your class tomorrow.
You know, if you skip the game to watch football, you didn't miss anything. Let's put it that way.
Right, exactly. And, the general consensus was that a lot of people took a lot of good stuff away from that game. Like there really were some high moments. Like we'll talk about Sorokin looked a little, he wasn't great, but he looked comfortable. Like, I don't think that you could have too many complaints about his game, considering it was his second NHL game ever, and what he was coming off of. So like there was good, there was bad, but they like that. We always talk about what an Islanders win looks like. That's exactly what an Islanders, like typical Islanders loss looks like for this generation of Islanders.
Yeah, for sure. Let's stop and talk about Sorokin before we head over to Thursday night's game. I was surprised he started. Like I think I said on last episode too, I just figured with games every other day, they would just get Varlamov in there, get him in the rhythm while Sorokin worked with the goalie coaches off the ice, got more acclimated, and then eventually played in one of the back-to-back games against the Flyers this coming weekend, which we're going to talk all about those games coming up too. But he started, and I was kind of surprised, and he looked much better. It's surprising what I'm sure, I guess Barry Trotz must have told him well in advance, you're going in tonight, you know, and told the guys you're going in tonight, because he definitely looked a lot more comfortable. Rebound control was an issue. Again, Trotz noted that himself after the game. The first goal by the internet's new favorite hockey player, Jack Hughes, was scored. That was a good goal. I mean, it was a laser right over his shoulder. It's going to get scored on anybody. He picked a top corner and he just happened to zap it right in there. So that was a tough one. And then the second one, it was a scrum and it bounced off of somebody and kind of popped right to Pavel Zacha, who put it home. There was another couple of juicy rebounds that ended up getting cleared away. The team as a whole played much better in front of him than they did against the Rangers, which was a total washout. So that was encouraging. So there were some encouraging signs there. And again, I remembered, and I feel like I may have mentioned this the first time, but you know, we've seen now this is year three of the Trotz era. And in both of the previous years, there were new goalies and it took time for those guys to kind of get to the point where they were just lights out every game. So like, you know, Robin Lehner left as an Islanders folk hero, but you know, for the first month or so, he was okay. Like he wasn't bad or anything, but there was definitely some moments of like, I don't know if this is really going to work out. You know, it was a new guy, new team, new goalie coach, a new head coach. And it took a month or so before he really started to kind of look comfortable. And then again, by January of that season, he was lights out and he was basically the everyday guy. And same with Semyon Varlamov. Like he did not, you know, he didn't play poorly when he first came to the Islanders, but it took him a while to get used to the style. So this kind of feels like we're trending in that same direction. Again, now with Sorokin, new team, new coach, new goalie coach, new country, new new language everybody's speaking. So
new personal freedoms.
Like, yeah, exactly. It's a whole new league. It's a whole new ice surface, a different size. So this guy's got to adjust for a lot. So, you know, maybe that time period gets a little bit longer, but it was encouraging to see him out there. And it looked like he was having a lot easier go of it than he did against the Rangers. That being said, this is now two games this guy started for the Islanders and they have scored a grand total of 0 goals, which is, that's unbelievable. Like, I mean, come on. Like that's ludicrous. I guess if somebody's going to set a stat like that, it had to be the Islanders, right? But I mean, it's almost like it's almost unfair at this point. It's really sad.
Yeah. Like you kind of put it right. It's sad that the Islanders are doing very little to put this guy in. And when I say the Islanders, I mean like the players more than the staff, but they're doing very little to set him up for success. Like you'd love to do, you know, to score 5 goals like for him and let him coast to a 5-2 win. And that hasn't been the case. So like every shot he's faced has kind of been a pressure shot, you know, in that Ranger game, because it was his first game ever. And then for this one, because it was a tight game, the rebound control definitely made me nervous. but like in the last episode, I was talking about how he was visibly maybe the first time I've ever noticed a goalie and being like, he's got to move over. And like, he just looked off, like not in the right spot. Obviously, his positioning was much better in this game. He was a very quiet, 22 save performance. I don't really remember many shots from the Devils after like the first or second goal, I guess. And the second goal too was there was some failed defensive coverage there. I think it was Nick Leddy who was like pretty late. It was a bad rebound, yeah, for sure. But then nobody was really picking up their guy. And the other thing I've noticed, and Varlamov was the one who pointed this out, was that when we think about goalies coming from the bigger ice surface, we think about the space, like that it's like probably angles and like just like a weird adjustment that like your eyes and vision has to take in. But what Varlamov pointed out, and I never really thought about it, was that these smaller rinks, what they it condenses the actions, obviously. So you're having 10 guys basically in a smaller area, so the chaos factor kind of rises exponentially. And you can kind of tell that Sorokin feels like he's a little late to like chaotic bounces, like a bounce off a shin, a bounce off the end boards. Like he's right. A little late. The crazy thing is he made a great save. I don't even know if he saved it, but he got over. Yeah. He did a couple
stretched
of changes.
Over. Yeah. That yeah. one save. Yeah.
And I think he did that against the Rangers too. Early on, he's very quick to get over, but so if he can just kind of turn his like reaction or get used to the end boards or like the puck bouncing off of people's shins a little bit more, you can imagine how good this guy's going to be because of he's so good at moving laterally and basically coming out of nowhere to make a save. But yeah, it's just like it in a weird way, like because obviously Noah Dobson has been so much better since his clunker against the Rangers, which kind of gave everyone a little bit of fright. You part of this game, like maybe even more important than anything else, was just Sorokin getting out of it without looking as poor as he did. And so you can at least tick that box. And I think it was smart. I think it was the right team to start against, because you're talking about like, look, the Devils kind of are what they are. There are a couple good pieces. Like you said, everybody discovered Jack Hughes all of a sudden a couple days ago, even though he was the first overall draft pick last year. All people are really patting themselves on the back for picking a bounce back year for a guy who was the first overall pick a year ago. Like, I just don't understand it. But that's hockey Twitter. But like it's there's not much offensive oomph to the Devils as there is to other games. So I feel like this game was probably circled a while ago as his true debut. And that's why they stuck to it. And he definitely gets a passing grade. He's one of, five players who I thought were kind of really acquitted themselves well. Like JG Pezzo, I thought had been really good all season. It's just like we can talk about it. Like the elephant in the room is that that Ross Johnston really isn't. He's kind of hurting the team too much right now. It's not good.
Yeah, let's pause there. Another surprise in the lineup was, and we talked about this last week, this kind of rotating third line winger situation with Pageau in the middle and whoever knows who on the sides. It had been Kiefer Bellows. He had played really well. Trotz liked what he saw. Oliver Wahlstrom is kind of hanging out and is just kind of ready to go whenever. Michael Dal-Col came off of IR and slotted in, and you thought, oh, okay, we're going to see probably Dal-Col and Wahlstrom maybe together, or maybe they're going to try Dal-Col and Bellows. And no, it was Dal-Col and Ross Johnston. Now, we all like Ross. He's a good soldier. He's a good dude. He spent that 1 year where he basically never played and just practiced, and the guys all loved him. But to play a line with Michael Dal-Col, again, a nice player with a nice skill set who simply does not score, with JG Pageau, who can score, who's on a power play. Like he's an offensively minded dude. And also Ross Johnston, who's not going to score. And then you have a whole line below them of Casey Zekas, Matt Martin, Cal Clutterbuck. Again, three guys that can play and have a purpose, but chances aren't going to score. Now you've already handicapped your team going into this game. Now, I know, like you just said, the Devils are not, this offensive juggernaut or anything. They're not the Leafs, let's be honest, or even the Bruins. And this just, I love Barry Trotz, and I always will, I think. And he's done so many great things for the Islanders. But, man, this just didn't really make a whole lot of sense. And maybe they did it because it was the Devils. And the same thing like you thought. I mean, how many games did we watch as Islanders fans of teams starting their backup goalie against them? Like, it's just kind of the same thing. But it ended up, being a problem. And then it got even worse when Anthony Beauvillier left with a lower body injury. He's day to day right now. Maybe he plays tomorrow night against the Capitals. Who knows? But I mean, he left halfway through the game with an injury. And so now you're hampered even more. And it's just like, that was just not, I think, conducive to getting a lot out of that lineup. And you could see, again, they had zone time, but they just weren't going to create anything. And they just nothing ever kind of materialized. And so that, I hope, is something we never see again. There's really no, you know, if Martin's healthy, as a lot of people have said, there's no reason for him and Martin for Johnston and Martin to be in the same lineup together. And if Dal Colle is healthy, there's definitely no reason for them, him and Johnston, to be on the same damn line. Like, there's just, I don't know. I don't see the logic.
Yeah. It's if there was a moment yesterday in yesterday's game against the Devils that Pageau and Cizikas were on the line together, they made a really nice play off the half board. And Johnston was playing on the ice with them, and he kind of was just like standing in front of the net doing his thing, you know, being big and trying to get in Wedgwood's line of vision and whatever. But he was basically just staying out of the way, and Cizikas and Pageau kind of knifed through the zone. Like, they were connecting on a give and go below the dots, and it worked. That Cizikas gets a great, probably the Islanders' best scoring opportunity to that point of the game, and it was because the Pageau was playing with someone who's, you know, not even, I mean, Casey Cizikas isn't a 40 goal scorer, but he's offensively competent. So that helps. And that, it's just very frustrating because, like, we waited all season last year to get a third line center because we're like, well, we kind of have the pieces for a decent third line with, whether it's be Brassard or whoever. And, this time around, it's like, well, we did the hard part, which is get the third line center, and now we're setting him up for, and we paid a pretty penny for it, and now we're setting him up for failure by just flanking him with I mean it's because it's Dal Colle is a passable player. Like, if it is Dal Colle, it's got to be you know, Wahlstrom or Bellows, and if it's Komarov, it's kind of got to be Wahlstrom or Bellows. It's like, it's just, it's, it should hopefully, you know, the dream is the two kids and Pageau, but it's frustrating because, like you said, like, Barry Trotz just does everything. He's like 99% perfect, and then he just reminds you that, like, no, there's, you know, not being an NHL coach still, like, he'll frustrate you sometimes with that because it's just, yeah, like you said, like, lose, then you lose Beauvillier. And this silver lining to all this is that the only way I honestly thought I could see Oliver Wahlstrom getting a game is through an injury to one of those top six wings, and you just don't want to see that happen. So, like, if Beauvillier is out against the Capitals and Wahlstrom comes in and plays well, then, like, at least he can force Trotz's hand. But, like, at the same time, I wouldn't count out – like, I wouldn't just not be surprised if we see, you know, second line Leo Komarov, Johnston with Pageau and Dal Colle. Like, I just wouldn't be surprised at all. And, you know, I wouldn't roster that lineup, but, you know, you just never know right now.
Yeah. The funny thing is, like, because I thought the same thing too. I'm like, man, wouldn't it be great to see Pageau with Bellows and Wahlstrom? But then, you know, I mean, we've all watched hockey long enough to know that, you know, coaches like the old veterans. And I totally understand why Trotz would not want to play that line, because it sounds like a line that's a total defensive liability. although, again, Bellows had shown a great deal of progress this year in that. Like, he had not been a defensive liability.
The only person that really made a play to deserve to be yanked was Johnston. Like, he's the only one. That's the frustrating part.
So maybe it could happen. But if he just came out and said, like, I don't feel like comfortable playing the two kids on the line together, then that's fine. And you know, play Dal Colle then. Like, I think, you know, Bellows, Pageau, Dal Colle line, or Bellows or Wahlstrom, Dal Colle, Pageau line is worth taking a look at. But Johnston, again, we love the guy. He's a great guy, big lug. And I'm sure that his teammates just love having him out there. But, you know, even going into that game, I was just like, man, I really hope this is only because it's the Devils and not, you know, the Capitals are coming up next, the Flyers. Those are both teams that can score a lot of goals. And maybe this is just their chance. Let's try it and see what happens. And, well, we saw what happened. Nothing. A whole lot of nothing happened. But that being said, like, we can't really put the fault for not scoring just at the feet of the bottom two lines. There are top two lines, too. Matt Barzal had a really rough game against the Devils on Sunday after having a spectacular game at times on Thursday. he had an amazing goal snipe right over Wedgwood's shoulder in the first period. And then later on, Jordan Eberle had another beautiful, had a great goal to end that first period. And that whole period was just all Islanders. Shots were 15-6. Looked like they were going to run away with it. Second period was actually most of the Devils. Somebody named Nathan Bastian scored. I never heard of him before. I had to look up his first name. I never heard of him. Brock Nelson was cut, but he came back and he scored a goal in the third period. And then Eberle had another goal in the third period. And it was just, again, a very workmanlike win. And it was nice to see Barzal, Eberle, Nelson scoring. I believe Lee had a good game also in that particular one. And, you know, that was nice to see. And then, you know, fast forward two nights and those same guys against that same team just could get nothing. Lee was almost invisible on Sunday. Eberle had a couple of chances, but he whiffed. And, you know, we've seen that before. Like, we just get snake bit, and hopefully it doesn't last too long. And Barzal was really, I mean, he tried, but he just couldn't really get anything working. And they need more out of those guys. And even Trott said after the game, they need more out of those top guys. Again, Bovillier was hurt, but, you know, Josh Bailey only has 1 point through whatever it is, five games so far. And, you know, we've seen him go through prolonged slumps too, and maybe this is it, but those guys need to contribute. And if they do, then, you know, maybe having a third line of, you know, JG Pageau and two guys that aren't going to score isn't that big a deal in the long run, but they need to do something. Cause like you said, right off the top, you know, it's either they look great or they get shut out, and it's, you can't do that for the next, whatever, 51 games and expect to make the playoffs. It's just like,
or I'd expect us to still be around.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh, it's, yeah.
I'll become like an Amish person or something. Like, come on. Like, I can't watch that. Yeah. It's insane. But yeah, and nobody knows this team better than Trotz too. So like it's not like Barry Trotz doesn't realize that this team is going to be offensively challenged throughout the season. And he knows that Jordan Eberle and Anders Lee and Brock Nelson and Bailey, these are streaky guys, Beauvillier. So it's not like he doesn't know that he's got to find a way to, with this team especially, like, it's very important for them to have their most optimal high ceiling lineup basically every night, because they're also not going to get as much offensive support from the back, because at least, you know, for the time being, just because Devon Taves was their most dangerous offensive defenseman, arguably, I guess, or, you know, it's pretty close, I guess, between him and Pollock, just because of Pollock's shot. But like, it's, so you're not going to get that support. Noah Dobson could, and has looked really, really good the past two games, especially offensively, and like just being a threat from the point and finding seams to get shots through and stuff like that. But it's pretty important that there's guys up and down the lineup that can pitch in. And it's just not the case when you're icing a line like that. And he can't be perfect. If Barry Trotz was perfect, then he wouldn't be an Islander. So
I guess we wouldn't have anything to talk about.
So. Exactly.
Yeah. So that about puts a ribbon on them. You know, I didn't want to get too down after Sunday night's game, because again, Thursday night's game was fantastic. Like, it really wasn't a whole lot to complain about. Varlamov looked great. Yeah, he got beat once, but I mean, he made 30 saves and he looked really good. So, you know, it's good to keep that stuff in perspective. But, you know, again, I keep focused on that 56 games. Like, there's just not a lot of time. This is not an 82 game season where, yeah, you got a couple clunkers, it happens, whatever. This is like the lockout season where it's like, no clunkers. You can't have a clunker. You know, meanwhile, I don't know if everybody remembers the first season, the first month of that season, the Islanders basically were in neutral. Like, they just literally couldn't buy a win. And then they made a sprint to the end and got in. And I really hope that they don't do that, and they just are comfortably in the playoffs the entire time. All right, we're going to take a break and talk about this week's games against the Capitals and Flyers. Please do not forget to leave us a review on iTunes and put your Twitter handle in the review so that you can enter for a chance to win some Islanders eBay swag straight from Mike's wallet. We got a lot of reviews so far. That's great. Keep them coming. Hopefully they're all 5-star reviews, but just leave us a review on iTunes, put your Twitter handle in there, and maybe in a couple of weeks or about a week, you'll find out who wins this week's prize, this month's prize. All right. Thanks a lot. We'll be back in a couple of minutes to talk about this week's games. All right. Thanks. Our favorite sponsor is VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, and mugs featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. There's all kinds of cool stuff there. Teams you've never even heard of, the Atlanta Knights, Cincinnati Mohawks, Cape Cod Freedoms. These are all real teams, and they all have merchandise at VintageIceHockey.com. They also have our Al Arbor t-shirts. You can get them there, and our portion goes directly to the Center for Dementia Research. You can use the code LIGHTHOUSE15, save yourself 15%. It's a pretty cool deal. You get a shirt, save some money, and you help out the Center for Dementia Research. That's VintageIceHockey.com. Okay, so the Islanders have four games this week. They're the back-to-back Saturday-Sunday against some pretty tough customers, the Caps and then the Flyers, the two teams, two of the teams they beat in the playoffs last year. The Capitals lineup is in a bit of a state of flux right now. Four of their players, including Alex Ovechkin, Evgeny Kuznetsov, Ilya Samsonov, and I believe Dmitry Orlov, were put on the COVID list because they broke a rule. You're not supposed to be hanging out in a teammate's hotel room, and that's exactly what it was. Everybody's supposed to have their own rooms to kind of keep the spread, you know, at a minimum. Teams are allowed to have like a common area where they're going to hang out. I mean, their teammates can't be in somebody's hotel room, and they all decided, we're going to hang out in a hotel room, and they all got busted for it. So they also cut the Caps are also got fined, I believe, $100,000 for that. So that's no joke. And now word that Tom Wilson might be hurt. I can't underestimate how many people listening to this are like, please don't let Tom Wilson play in this game. So I don't know. Maybe there's a chance he doesn't play. We'll see. I don't care who's in, who's out. This is a good team. Peter Laviolette is there now, and I totally expect them to come at the Islanders with whoever they have called up from Hershey or whatever, or their taxi squad to come up firing. And, I know they beat them in the playoffs last year with very little difficulty, but I don't know. I still feel like the Caps are kind of a big brother in this situation, and I would like for the Islanders to kind of add them to the list of teams that they just beat with routine regularity. Because they're going to see them a lot, and it's not a team that you want to get behind because you're probably going to be battling them for a playoff spot at the end of the season.
Yeah, and you kind of said it in a way where you said you can't have a clunker, but really what you can't do is you can't string together clunkers, and that's what makes the losses so harrowing, especially early in the year, is that if one loss turns into three in a row, like you're going to be looking up at six teams ahead of you in the division because everyone in this division goes to overtime when they don't play the Islanders.
That's another thing that's really irritating so far this season.
It's incredible. Like, the Capitals haven't lost in regulation yet. They've lost three games, but they haven't lost in regulation, and they just went to overtime twice in a row against the Sabres, and they were shorthanded in those games, and yeah, they looked all right. Like, they didn't look bad. They kind of Peter Laviolette loves his teams to kind of play like he loves to try to muffle offenses and like just suppress shots as much as he can, and that's the Capitals are kind of doing that, and the key thing is like this is kind of like the Devils series. Like, you need at the very minimum you need two points from these next two games against the Capitals. I mean, I think actually you need to shoot for three, but because when it's the schedule kind of set up the way it did with the Capitals losing four top end roster players, all of a sudden you said, okay, you need three of these next four games basically need to be wins. You're playing the Devils, who are without Nico Hischier and Jesper Bratt and Mackenzie Blackwood for one of the games, or both the games, actually.
Forgot about that.
So, like, you're getting kind of a little bit of a break that you need to take advantage. And so these two games against the Capitals now become really important just because of the extenuating circumstances. Like, they need to take 3 points if they get two, I'd actually kind of be disappointed, I guess, but they're there for the taking. Like, they don't have to worry about Alex Ovechkin scoring his usual goal from the top of the Islanders, right circle or left circle, and so they're the better team. They're going to be the favorites in both these games. Like, they just have to find a way to score, and the Capitals kind of, they're, I think it was Vitek Vanacek is the goaltender right now. He's been playing all right. And they just, if they kind of fluff up these next two games, like, then we were talking about, being worried in the beginning of the show, like, then you get worried because then you're looking at a back to back, and all of a sudden, like, you're at the 20% mark of the season, or 56 game season, I mean, a little short of 20, but by the end of these next four games, they will play 9 of 56. So it'll all of a sudden you're talking about, all right, now we're in the middle, the middle part of the season, the beginning of the season, quote unquote, is basically over. So it's a little scary for a 6th game of the season, but
I'm looking at the standings right now, and Washington's number one in the East with 9 points, Pittsburgh 8, Devils, Bruins, Flyers all 7, and then the Islanders 6. And then Buffalo's right behind him at 5. So, I mean, if they were to take 4 points from these two games with the Caps, that would be monumental, because then they would jump from 6th place to 1st, you know, barring whatever else anybody else does. So, I mean, that's just a huge thing. But, of course, the Capitals are going to feel the same way. Now, I don't know if they take 4 points and they would get some separation from the other teams in the division. I don't know if that 4-game ban includes Thursday's game 2. I feel like it does.
I think it does.
Yeah, this is an Eric Horner question. But if it does, great. Because, again, like you said, now, you know, again, we've all been at this a long time. We know what it's like when the Islanders go against a team that's, quote unquote, shorthanded or undermanned, and then they end up deciding to take the game off. I don't think Trotz is going to let that happen, and I hope that he doesn't let that happen, because, again, there's not a lot of time to be messing around here. Again, the Caps, you know, Wojciech Volski is their goalie, and he's been pretty good. You know, I mean, nobody's heard of this guy. He never played in the NHL before, I believe, before the season, but he's been pretty good coming in. In fact, if anything, he was better than some Samsonov, who was the nominal starter. And of course, like I said, they still have Nick Backstrom and John Carlson and TJ Oshie and a lot of the guys you already hate. So this is clearly a huge thing. The Tuesday game, by the way, probably the night you're listening to this, is on NBCSN. We'll talk a lot about that, a little bit about that more coming up. And then Saturday and Sunday, so that's Tuesday, Thursday, and then Saturday, Sunday, the Islanders play the Flyers. Now, the Flyers are another team that they're 3-2, 3-2-1, excuse me, and they haven't gotten off quite to the start that they expected to, coming off of a pretty darn good playoff run. They're not quite as dire as the Canucks are looking these days, but you know, things just haven't clicked as well. Carter Hart looked so great in the playoffs and has been very beatable this season, knock on wood. I haven't just jinxed the Islanders, and their top guns just really aren't firing either, much like the Islanders. Jake Voracek is firing at local sports writers. He's hitting there, but in terms of on the ice, you know, again, it's not bad. They have almost the same record as the Islanders. They just haven't, you know, people, I think, expected them to kind of, you know, start out on fire, and that just hasn't happened. But again, this is a team that, you know, you put it into stark terms right now. Like, if these games get away from you, you could be looking at a season that's already over, like 10 games in, which would be just monumentally disappointing. I don't know about over, but
yeah, you put yourself behind. Because so the way you got to look at it is, right, like, you look at the standings right now, the Rangers are kind of in that situation where, hey, like, two more losses in a row or something, and the rest of the division keeps picking up points. Like, you remember that Mario Party game where I think Bomb-Mom, he, like, cuts the cord to the, you, like, you're, like, floating, and if you, like, put A or B wrong, he like, cuts the cord and you float away. That's kind of like what the divisions are going to be like, these races. Like, you just don't want to be – you want to shorten the pool as much as you can. Just, you got to outswim you just got to outswim, like, the three teams behind you, four teams behind you, to get into the playoffs. And, like, so if the Rangers continue to struggle, it's great. Like, you kind of just want to chop one team off at a time, and you expect that the Sabres and Devils will kind of, you know, end up going in that range. So it's like, if you can continue to collect results at, like, this 3-2 pace is honestly not terrible. You want them to tick it up a little bit, you know, and it's, if you can continue to kind of trudge along at this rate, and you're going to at least start outlasting teams that are going to throw in the towel, begin selling off assets or whatever, and then the division comes a little easier. So it's like, you can't fall behind. You can't be threatened to fall behind. Four games in 6 nights or whatever it's going to end up being always has that potential, especially when you're playing two good teams, even if the Flyers are underperforming right now. Like, these are two teams. You just wouldn't be surprised to see the Islanders lose four games in a row. Be soul crushing, but it just wouldn't be a huge surprise. So you got to hope that they win tomorrow night, because that immediately relieves a lot of the pressure. Mm.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good way to put it. You know, you don't want it to get away from you, and all of a sudden you lose two games and there it goes. So we'll have to see. So this is a tough week. I mean, and what's funny is that in a lot of ways, January is probably the easiest schedule the Islanders are going to have going forward. There's a lot of games against Buffalo in the next month. And, you know, that'll be their first look at them. But I mean, again, you know, Buffalo's not that bad. Like, so, I mean, even though they're quote unquote one of the worst teams in the division, they're still pretty good. I can still take 2 points from you. So, but Caps and Flyers first, so we'll see what happens. Okay, so I mentioned NBCSN a couple minutes ago. Word came out this week that the CEOs or the bosses over there have alerted everybody to the fact that at the end of this year, meaning December 2021, NBC Sports Network will cease to exist and it will go away. Which is kind of a shocking thing. The NHL and NBCSN / Versus / Outdoor Life Network is a partnership that goes back, almost 20 years now, right? I mean, back to, I guess, the first lockout, I think, was when they first came back and started doing that. And it's pretty wild. Now, they talked about, now the NHL's contract with NBCSN, I think, is up at the end of this year. At the end of this season. So this doesn't necessarily mean a bad thing for hockey. Even if they enter into a new contract, they could get games played on USA Network, which ironically is in more homes than NBC Sports Network, or it could end up on Peacock. Actually, just today, WWE announced a partnership with Peacock. They're going to move all their WWE Network stuff over there, get rid of the network. So, you know, they're kind of making moves, and I know I don't want yet another streaming service on my monthly bill, but, you know, we'll just kind of see what happens. But, you know, there's a lot of different ways to take this. And I want to say right up front the obvious thing, which is that there's a lot of people working for NBCSN that are behind the camera, what they call below the line. And this is going to impact them greatly. I hope it doesn't mean that everybody just sort of loses their jobs on December 31st. NBC is a big company. I'm assuming that some people will get, like, you know, relocated or maybe get a chance to get reassigned someplace else. But I think a lot of people are going to end up looking for other work. And that's really sad. Like, that's really sad that it's got to come to that. And I hope that everybody, you know, can land softly. Our friends Dan and Noel work in TV, and it's a tough business. Sometimes, you know, you have a job and then one day somebody says, nope, you're done. And then you're out and you got to find something else. And it's tough. And I feel for all of them. And, you know, that was my first thought when I heard that news, was like, there's a lot of people that work for NBCSN that are in for a rough year, you know. That said, as a fan, as a viewer, that news hit differently. And I mean, I feel like you and I are on the same page, so I'll just throw this out to you. We're both hockey fans. You're a huge soccer fan. Outside of a hockey game or a soccer game, and maybe the Olympics every couple of years, have you ever had a reason to turn on NBCSN at any point ever for anything else?
Absolutely. No, it's just, and it's so sad because they do like a little bit of like tangential Premier League coverage, or maybe like a little like side piece to NHL coverage, but it's not like anything you tune in to watch. It's like the same top 10 countdown of the best goals since 2000 or whatever that they show. Some random summer afternoon. So they just like in a weird way, it's like there's some like nostalgia that, like, let's say they do move on from NBCSN, and there's some nostalgia that I'll miss, like you know, the old Latin days. Like, I loved watching that era of hockey when they were playing on Outdoor Life Network was one of my favorites. It's just like we were one of two of very few people that were watching, you know, yeah, the games. But, club. Yeah, exactly. But you can't remember them. Like, for some reason, I always associate Chris Campoli with the OLN logo. Like, I just feel like he was, whenever the Islanders were playing, you know, their lone game on national TV, if you can call it that, Campoli would score. And, you know, DiPietro, too, I guess, was a OLN superstar because he was the only player that anyone on the OLN broadcast knew played for the Islanders. But it's just like they just never they they failed. It's like hard to put it in another way. It's like when you take over, and it's weird because they did such a good job. They do such a good job with their Premier League coverage because they really lean into what is a Premier League fan watching for. These people, myself included, get up at 7 in the morning on a Saturday, like give them the product that they want, that they're going out of their way to watch. Like they want to watch this sport. Like hockey fans and soccer fans are kind of similar in the fact that like if you aren't one of us, like we'll just tell you how much you're missing out and how passionate hockey and soccer fans are about their sport. Like it's very different because they do sort of live below the mainstream. And whereas NBC Sports got it so right with the Premier League, they just never did with the, like Mike Milbury was on this channel since till what this year. So like, the bulk of hockey fans make fun of, they spend when they're watching Mike Milbury, they're doing it and they're tweeting something snarky about him. It's like these people understand that, like the NBC Sports executives they're not idiots. They know who Mike Milbury is and what he does to like kind of the hockey watching masses. And they never took the opportunity to take this league, which is basically a blank slate in terms of like, you can turn it into whatever you want. It's like, since it's so below the radar of everyone else, like if you start marketing it in new different ways and thinking about outside the box with your broadcast and whatever, it could have been a huge success, but they kind of just went to the old kind of boring tropes about hockey and never really let the sport grow in the way it should have, or given it even like they don't give their fans the respect they should have. Like, I mean, think about Sunday. Sunday was a huge day for NFL. It was I think it's the biggest day of the year ratings wise. The NHL, instead, they put 5 games on Saturday, the day there was no NHL, no NFL, and then 11 on Sunday, which is very unusual. Usually Saturday is very heavy Sunday. And NBC, the game that they chose for national television at 12:30, the only game that doesn't have a football game going up against it was between the 2 worst teams in the league. and yes, like we get, like it comes, like they still go by ratings for some reason. And like that's what pays the bill, even though nobody understands it. That like Detroit and Chicago, I guess, are, you know, they're still big markets even when they're bad. But like that's the whole, all these people do is talk about how they want to grow the game and they want to introduce new audiences. Like the way to do that isn't to show them the teams that are going to finish 31st and 30th in the league on the network. I just don't understand it. And that, like, those kind of decisions have been made by both like the league and NBC for 14, 15 years now.
Yeah, the thing that I keep coming back to is that they just never really sold hockey to anybody else that wasn't already watching. Like, you know, we're already watching. So, like, they don't need to sell us. And in fact, what they were trying to sell us, we didn't want. And I keep coming back, and I'm not blaming him for this whole thing, but we can't let it go without mentioning Pierre Maguire, the signature single supernova of hockey fan hatred out there. I don't know who at NBC Sports Network loves this guy so much that they just put him. I know they took him off like the main broadcast, but he's still there. And I was watching a game last week. It was Penguins Capitals, I guess. It was Wild. It was Wild and somebody else. And Nick Bjugstad is on the Wild now. And, you know, Nick Bjugstad has been in the league for 10 years. 10 years this guy's been in the league. And Pierre is droning on and on and on about his time at the University of Minnesota and the NCAA and why he knows he can score because he was so good at the University of Minnesota. The guy has been in the league for 10 years. Like what are we going to learn from his time in college that we don't already know from his 10 years in the NHL? Like, I don't understand. And this is what they think hockey fans want. They want a guy droning on about KHL teams and junior teams and NCAA teams. Nobody cares. I don't know if I've told this story on here before, but like my breaking point with Pierre was when it was the Eastern Conference Finals. I want to say it was the year Tampa Bay was in the Eastern Conference Finals, and I want to say that was the year they got Ryan Callahan. Maybe he was still a Ranger at the time. I don't even know. And like it was either in overtime or late in the third period, and he was going on and on about his time with the Kitchener Rangers or whatever it was, his junior team. And I'm like, who cares? Like, why are you telling me this right now? I don't understand. What purpose does this serve to talk about a guy's junior career? We're in the third period of an Eastern Conference Finals. And then, like, if you watch the football games last night, they're not talking about Tom Brady's time at Michigan, right? They're not talking about Aaron Rodgers at USC. Like, they're talking about what's going on right now. Tom Brady's won six or whatever Super Bowls. Rodgers is
also, they also don't have Pierre, like a person in at the 50-yard line.
Right.
Being like, wow.
Shoving their opinions in all the time. Yeah, three-man booth. Nobody needs a three-man booth for hockey. I'm sorry. They just don't. It's just there's too much going on. They don't need it. But, like, this is a small, you know, these are small nitpicks for a larger, you know, problem, which is this. It never sold it. And, like, I'm a soccer novice. I only really put it on in the mornings because it's not Food Network and it's not Disney Channel, you know, which is what my wife or my daughter would be putting on at that time. And it's live sports and it's fun. You know, it's a fun sport to watch. And they never do anything like that. Like, they just go for it. And they just talk about this. And if you got to catch up, then you just catch up. Like, they just talk about dudes. I don't know who the hell they are. They know and they tell you. And it's like they rotate in different teams. There's all these – sometimes there's a team on. You're like, who? Like, I never heard of these guys. It's not the same Penguins, Flyers, Blackhawks, Rangers, Capitals, Triumvirate that, you know, or, you know, Cartel that we keep seeing over and over again. They spread it around. And in fairness, NBC's gotten better about that lately. I mean, again, the goddamn Minnesota Wild were on the other day. Like, that's not, it doesn't happen too often. Heck, the Islanders are on, you know, Tuesday night, but it just, you know, as a product, it never made me feel like I was kind of, you know, I was home. Like, I never felt home, and I'm a hockey fan. Like, I'm tuning in because I want to watch your product, and I still never felt like I was really truly comfortable watching these games. And then you got, like you said, Mike Milbury. I mean, nothing sells a sport more than some Frankenstein like old bastard complaining about PK Subban dancing in warmups. Like, that's a really a great way to sell your sport, right? Like, man, I'll never forget he did that. Like, dude, come on, seriously? Like, I don't know. It's
exasperating because it's like every sport since what? 2000, since basically since we can say social media or since like OTT services started with and whatever has grown exponentially. Right. Like the NBA is a cultural force now. It's basically like the third house of legislator. Like their power, the cultural power of the NBA is
massive.
Like tangible. You can feel it every day. The NFL obviously still is just like, you know, it's basically like the sixth wing or seventh wing now, I guess, of the American military. Like that's how big it feels. And right. Obviously I'm joking. And then MLB of course is very, it's ingrained. It's the pastime. And I guess of those three, like MLB is probably the closest to the NHL's predicament right now, just cause it keeps shooting itself in the foot. But the MLB's problem is a little different, whereas it's like labor strife more than just bad marketing by the network and I guess the league involved, but it's just very frustrating when you tune into a game on NBCSN and like a good one, like if a big one that might have ramifications for the Islanders, you know, let's call it, you know, I don't know, Bruins, Penguins, whatever you want to call it, and like you said, like they spend their airtime talking about Jared McCann, like his junior days, or they do that. And they just don't ever give you any reason to get invested in the people that are playing the sport. First of all, like the culture of the sport at all. Like there's no, like, there's some great hockey traditions out there. Like there's some great reasons why we think like the Nashville Predator fan base is nuts, or like for the Islanders, like why the Islander fan base is nuts. Like, it's just, they don't ever really get into those moments. Like they did in the Premier League too. Like they'll explain to you what makes this club who it is and unique. And they never really do with the NHL because like you said, they go to the same teams, the same, that's a great way to put it, cartel. Like, and they're just like, I wouldn't be surprised if like Sidney Crosby retired, and when he retires, like the Penguins and when the Penguins play the Capitals the next game, like they'll still be using Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin's pictures on like the game poster. Oh, yeah. And it's just like, they haven't realized that like, if they put a little bit of effort in, like it and listen to kind of the masses. And I guess like, hockey fans can sort of take some blame too, because it's like hockey Twitter is just so terrible at the moment. It's just
also true.
And yeah. Like every little thing that any team or network, the league does get scrutinized. Like they, all you hear on hockey Twitter all day is like, the league needs to do a better job promoting this player or whatever, that they need to market their player better. But also here I've, you know, taken this player, same one I want to see marketed, and reduced him to three math algorithms. Like it's like, you can't have it, you can't really have it both ways if you're complaining about the league not like lifting players up and then bringing that player down. And at the same time, it's just, it's there's no one's going to ever win that way. And we're very nostalgic hockey fans. We talk about like I think of Sergei Fedorov, to me is like the first hockey player that like I would watch highlights of and being like, whoa, like this guy is crazy. Like I can't believe Sergei Fedorov plays the sport I love. And I probably watched like six Sergei Fedorov games in my life because I could never, they were never on TV. Like I couldn't watch a Red Wings game unless they were in the Stanley Cup. And now that the league has kind of broken that barrier down, everyone has, and they have opportunities to, like, I still can't watch, you know, unless I pay a lot of money out of pocket to see Leon Draisaitl or Connor McDavid or whatever. So it's just, it's crazy that they haven't solved even the simplest of problems. Yeah. But like I said, it's a hockey fan problem too.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny. I'm glad you brought up like Draisaitl and McDavid, because I don't feel like Canadian hockey fans and Canadian media guys understand this predicament. Like I don't think they quite understand, because again, they're tuning into NBCSN if at all, because they're hockey people. You know, they watch Sportsnet and I guess mostly Sportsnet, probably not TSN, or they do CBC, I guess, for Hockey Night in Canada. But like, I don't think they quite understand how little presence this sport has in this country. And honestly, like, and this might sound like hyperbole, but like, I think a lot of it has to be laid at the feet of their broadcasting partner. Like that, just NBC has never done a damn thing to grow this sport in any meaningful way in any point. And, you know, again, you brought up the Capitals before. They might be like, I know that, you know, the Penguins, we talk a lot about the Penguins and that kind of era, you know, was almost kind of part and parcel of what this NBC Sports era was. You know, the Penguins and the NBC Sports kind of go together. And that's true. I mean, at least they've won three Stanley Cups. But like with the Caps might be the ultimate NBCSN team, because they just promote the same guys over and over again. And I'm not the first person to say this, but I 100% agree with it. If you only ever took in hockey, you know, via NBCSN, you would think that TJ Oshie is the greatest player in NHL history. Like you would think that he's Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, Gordie Howe, Rocket Richard, Mike Bott, you name it. Like he's the one guy who can always score. And it all goes back to his time at the Olympics, that shootout against Bobrovsky at the Olympics, which was like a singular moment that was like really hella cool. And TJ Oshie is a nice player. Don't get me wrong. He's a really good player, obviously, but like, come on now. Like we've been slobbering over this guy for years now. And how has that grown the game? You know, I mean, I'm sure TJ Oshie has grown the game because he plays for a good team, and you know, I'm sure Capitals fans love him, but I mean, outside of the sport, nobody's heard of TJ Oshie. Like I work with an office full of sports fans. Nobody has ever heard of TJ Oshie except for the other two hockey fans that I work with. Hello, shout out to Dan and Paul if you're listening. But yeah, you know, it's just so like, you know, on one hand, like we've ranted enough, I guess, about this, but like, you know, it's a big announcement.
Yeah, you feel bad. I think it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Cause it also, it could go two ways. Like it could go really south for the NHL. Like,
oh God, yeah.
Like we're saying, like this league was playing on the Outdoor Life Network 15 years ago. So like, it's not like this, like there's not a chance that this completely blows up and the NHL does play like everything on Peacock and nobody watches or whatever and becomes a pay-per-view sport only. And, but there's also the opportunity that someone else, you know, does swoop in or somebody, you know, takes over and does take the league to the, where it should be going. And like there's always like that running joke among Islander fans, like, and I, as a kid too, I always took offense to it, like that they were just never on ESPN or NBC Sports or OLN or whatever. Like they maybe get one game a year. And then as I got older, I'm like, I'm happy like that I didn't have to deal with this. Like I'm happy that I didn't have to watch it. Like just because of how, you know, terrible the product's been. And then I keep thinking about the NBA, man. Like you think about that show, I can't remember if it's TNT or ESPN.
Oh, Inside the NBA.
Yeah,
with Shaq and Barkley.
Yeah, exactly. Like they have this show that just it just clicks. Like if you turn it on, it's appointment viewing for every NBA fan. The right. people on the show are beloved. Like they are beloved. So like that makes a huge difference. Like just think about how backwards it is that they show people that nobody in the sport that they're supposed to be talking about likes. Like nobody. Like just think about how backwards that is. Instead of being like, hey, this isn't working. Let's get hockey fans love. They love, whoever they love.
Right. The worst GM that anybody's ever heard of. Like that's right. the guy they want.
Exactly.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
So like it just doesn't make sense. And the like you heard all offseason when the NBA was trading, every superstar got traded, that they're like, oh, why hasn't this ever happened in hockey? It's part of the reason. It's just like it's not this cultural force. Like there was a big trade, like two of the best players in the league got traded this week and nobody did anything. Nobody cared. Everybody just complained about who won and who lost and whipped right. out charts left and right about like why Patrick Laine won. Why the Blue Jackets won the trade or why the Jets won the trade. No, it's like nobody got excited about it because there's no inside the NBA where you're like, oh crap, like it's Saturday night. I guess, Hockey Night in Canada is it in Canada, but in the US there's nothing like that to tune to be like, all right, let's get stuck in and talk about Pierre-Luc Dubois and Patrick Laine and here,
Yeah, but if there was like a thing like that, people would just complain about that too. Yeah,
that's very true.
Because it'd be like Don Cherry or whatever, or somebody.
Right.
Like, maybe not him, but it'd be Brian Burke and a bunch of other guys. And it's okay to be buttoned up like hockey. You can't, I don't expect NBCSN to like completely change how this it is. And you can't change. I mean, hockey players are buttoned up guys. Like they're quiet. They're all like this, they're all Anders Lees really in a lot of ways. Like they do what's right. They smile. They tell you that, it's that they went out and played the right way. Or next time we got to come and show more effort, like that kind of thing. And that's fine. But like, you can still do that in a way. You could still be that. And then, be shown in a way that draws other people in, like the EPL coverage from NBCSN is not like, fireworks all the time. Like, again, I don't really know what's going on, but it's a competently made thing. And it makes me feel like this is cool. I want to be part of this and I want to watch this, even if I have no idea what's going on, it's just kind of cool. So I don't know, but yeah, I mean, yeah, this could end up being a good thing. It could end up, blowing up in the NHL's face as things often do. Maybe ESPN wants a league partner. Talk about, Sergei Fedorov. That when I hear that name, I immediately hear Gary Thorne shouting his name in a playoff game. So
like the old ESPN2 logo.
Right. Yeah. But see, then the problem becomes like you're one of a million sports on ESPN. So,
right.
But I don't know. So we'll see. Oh boy. All right. So yeah, there's a lot to chew on there. Okay. Thanks for joining us for our NHL media roundtable. We'll have Richard Deitch on next week.
Yeah, right.
The Athletic.
get into the X's and O's of that. Yeah, right? It is frustrating because there's nowhere else you can't go anywhere else too. That's the other problem. Like my bosses at work are always, they're always like, why do hockey fans like, why are they like this? And I'm like, because there's nowhere to go. Like they asked like why they thought the Athletic committed so much, so many resources to NHL coverage. And I was like, well, because for me, the Islanders have had an average of like 0.8 beat writers. and we're not alone. Like there's probably been a seasons where like the Arizona Coyotes kind of just got ignored by the Arizona newspapers and the Ducks and whatever. Like, so we needed a place to go and NBC Sports, like, oh wow, like at least it's NBC, like we're attached to some sort of legitimacy. And then it, like you said, it wasn't ever home, it wasn't a place to go, and it's really unfortunate because it still is a hell of a sport. As much as we hate it.
And you know what? It just occurred to me, and we'll end on this. NBC Sport, NBCSN was the Barclays Center of the NHL.
Yes.
So there you go. It was fine. It just never felt like home.
Yeah. Oh man.
There you go. I love that. 0.8 beat writers per season. That's great. Because that's 100% true.
When I would talk to my friends in college, they'd be like, I'd just be like, oh yeah, like I know who Fluta Shinzawa is. Because like I need to sometimes read the Bruins newspaper to find out about the Islanders.
Right. Yeah. Oh yeah. No, totally. I mean, yeah. When I was a Stan Fischler intern, I used to read all those out. This was in the early days of the internet. Like I used to just log in. He wanted all those clips. And so I would just spend all my whole day reading other columnists talking about the Islanders. And it was like, I mean, not really. They were talking about their teams, but like we never heard about the Flames or the Canucks or the Oilers here in on Long Island. We just never did. So it was fun to hear about that. But yeah, it's again, this is a problem that I don't think any Canadian media writer or hockey writer or hockey fan even understands exists, but we know all too well. Okay. I think we've done enough damage here. Mike, where can everybody follow you to talk about the Islanders and lots of other subjects?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at the Big Lebowski with two E's. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. I had a new column out. I recommended a book on wrestling called We Promised You a Great Main Event. If you're into wrestling, it's a pretty cool book by a guy named Bill Hanstock. He used to be an SBN writer. He's a good dude. Loves comic books. So he's on my good side all the time. And yeah, that's about it. So you know, the Islanders games are all at 7 o'clock again. Tuesday's game is on NBCSN. Check it out because there probably won't be too many more of these in the future. And then the other games are all on MSG Plus, I guess, for the rest of the week. Okay. And we'll be back next week. Thanks a lot for listening. Don't forget to leave us a review. Leave your Twitter handle in the review so we can enter you into our contest, and I will talk to you next time. All right. Bye-bye.